This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Just spending the break arguing with people about goalie interference on Twitter. This is welcome to my life. Again, once and for all, here's the way it works, folks. Think of it when you're wondering, oh, are they're gonna challenge us? Okay, so maybe I should try to figure out what's gonna be interference and what's not gonna be interference. Here's what you need to know at all times about goalie interference. If you go into the crease, your liability goes through the roof. Even a tiny little touch on a goaltender, maybe just brushing the gloves, anything like that, that's going to be called goalie interference. What they're trying to do is set a line, and that line is the blue paint. You cannot go in there. And if you do, again, anything you do to and around the goaltender can be called goalie interference. So let's maybe stop with the, we don't even know what goalie interference is anymore. Well, maybe because you don't bother trying to figure it out. You'd rather just complain about something that stares you in the face. All right. Sal Kraken making news yesterday. Ron Francis firing Dave Haxtell along with assistant Paul McFarlane yesterday. Kate Shefty from the Seattle Times joins me now for further discussion on this and all things Kraken. Kate, thanks so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
The pleasure is mine. How much of this dismissal yesterday was a surprise, a shock from Seattle Kraken fans, or was this expected after the season that Seattle just had?
I kind of thought I could see it going both ways, honestly. The results were not there this year. It was a very up and down. You know, they had 2 8-game losing streaks, one of which was, you know, right when they needed to really, they had a chance. They had an opening. They could overtake Vegas, and they just completely fell. They even like kind of held on at the trade deadline, you know, kind of gave a vote of confidence, like, you know, we'll see how you guys do. This could work. And then they held on to Justin Schultz, and who's a pending UFA, just to kind of, you know, bolster them. And then they just totally fell apart. And, you know, I could sort of see them giving Haxtell till Thanksgiving to kind of see if he could channel the what happened last year and kind of, but also, you know, you got to send a message to players, to fans that's not acceptable and that you're hoping for more. So you know, they finished up interviews, which is not surprising. And, you know, Ron Francis likes to hear everybody out. And then he made the move yesterday.
Yeah. How much of this decision do you think for Ron Francis was influenced by how the players spoke about Dave Haxtell?
He said that it didn't matter, but, you know, there are reports. ESPN's Emily Kaplan said that some of the players leaving said that they, you know, that they didn't want to play for him again, essentially. And, you know, you do wonder, you know, if that is correct, like who that was. You know, Kyler Yamamoto came in here and he's a Spokane native. He's the first Washingtonian to, I'm not even sure that's a real word, but could be, to play for the Kraken. And it was a big, everyone was very excited. And then he barely played. Yeah. He never really found a spot. So was it him? That would make perfect sense. I'm not saying it was, but, you know, what is it, guys who weren't getting playing time who had issues with the way he was coaching that, you know, or was it, you know, somebody like a veteran and you would give more stock to one than the other. But, I think it had a lot to do with results and you know, where they want this to go. And was it all Haxtell's fault? Absolutely not. But this is how it works.
So a couple of things here. And I want to get to the second part, which is, do we expect even more moves? Like, I fully expect this to be the beginning of even bigger moves for Seattle. I want to get there in a second. But I'm of the opinion and of the mind that when Coachella Valley are done their run, and hopefully for them it goes all the way to the Calder Cup Finals, at the end of it we find out that Dan Bylsma is the next head coach of Seattle. Do you believe same?
I could easily see it. People have been trying to talk me out of that, but I think I could certainly see it. He's done so well for Coachella Valley. if he wants it, and you know, and if he's you know, somebody tried to tell me the other day, you know, he's so comfortable down in the AHL. Like, why would he want to take? They always want the NHL job. You know, they always want it. Yes. They always go for it, even if they say they're happy down there. What else are they going to say? Yeah. You know, so. I think if he wants it, he is very well poised. He's been handling guys, you know, like, you know, training guys like Shane Wright and Ryker Evans, who are going to be probably on the roster, almost certainly on the roster next year. And it's just been such a good run for them. And players do seem to like him, and he has done such a good job. And he's, you know, he's got a cup ring. That's important, right?
I'm with you, and here's one of the reasons I am, and you already mentioned it, and that's, you know, Shane Wright, Ryker Evans, all these types of players, younger players, he's already been there with him, and I can't help but thinking of someone like John Cooper and why he fit with Tampa right away. Well, he had coached all these guys, or at least a bunch of these guys in the American Hockey League before taking the big bench boss job in Tampa. So to me, this one does make a lot of sense that we're ready for that. You know, that next wave coming in from Coachella Valley. Like, I don't know how many players are going to be on from Coachella Valley next year, but it's going to be more than a couple. And Dan Bylsma has been shepherding them through their last couple of years here in Coachella Valley. So that does make a lot of sense, and that sort of lines up with traditional wisdom. The other thing that I wonder about, I was just having a conversation about this before you came on. That was a pretty grumpy at times, maybe angry at times, Ron Francis that we saw yesterday. And normally Ron Francis is pretty chill, pretty laid back, handles things very calm. I look at that and sort of trying to read the tea leaves here on what's going to happen with Seattle next. I believe this is going to be the summer of bigger moves for Seattle. Kate, agree, disagree?
Well, you know, I probably would have said that last summer too, and then they really didn't do a whole lot. It's hard to tell. You got to think so, right? But then also they were very successful not that long ago. They think that what they're proud of their core. They think that they've got mostly what they need, but they just weren't scoring this year, and that is not something you can overcome very easily. And I imagine Justin Schultz probably isn't gonna stick around. Early indications have not been that he's staying. So there will be, and that opens up the space for Ryker Evans. He's already there. The newfangled fourth line experiment. A year ago, their fourth line was the envy of the league. Talked about constantly. We had multiple 20-goal scorers down there. It was wild. But then this year, the replacements didn't really work out. So maybe they try something new there. They brought most of those guys in on pretty short deals. And, you know, you gotta trade. I would think you gotta make at least a couple moves, you know, supplemental pieces. This isn't really, you know, they haven't really gone for the big splashy free agent or the big name on the trade market. Yep. That hasn't really been Seattle's thing. And I'd be pretty floored if that wound up being their thing this summer, but I hope they make some complimentary moves, you know. So what else? You got to do that, right?
I really get the feeling that that Ron Francis is looking to knock things around the box in Seattle. But again, to your point, we'll see what happens there. How are let me close on this one? How are fans about the team right now? Like, the first year is always like that. That's the honeymoon year, and they didn't make the playoffs, but whatever. Everything else was great. Cool rink, great vibe. Like, everything about the Kraken home run, became a financial leader in the NHL, one of the most important organizations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Year two brought it to, you know, some playoff success, knocking off the defending Stanley Cup champions, going into the second round, and everything was great, and now we're ready for the next step, and then this year happened. How are fans about this hockey team right now?
You know, it was so wonderful to see the city of Seattle kind of discover playoff hockey, and it was electric. Like, it was just, you know, it was, everyone was talking about it. The flags were flying. This is Mariners country, man. Everyone loves their baseball and their basketball, even though they don't need, they're still, everyone just wants the Sonics to come back. Like, but then all of a sudden it was like, and people were talking, and it wasn't just all, you know, are they going to make the playoffs? They were talking really intelligently about hockey, and I, you know, and it was just such an amazing place to be last spring. And it's just, it's really unfortunate that it's gone pretty far south as far as interest, you know, especially after that impressive flame out at the trade deadline, starting at the trade deadline, you know, it was kind of, and just by the end of the season, you know, everyone was pretty disillusioned, I would say, is maybe the word I would use here. The diehards are still sticking around, but ain't nobody reading our stories after about mid-March. So I think people were pretty upset, but, you know, there's always the Mariners. So hopefully they can enjoy that instead.
We shall see. Kate, thanks so much for stopping by today. It's been a delight catching up with you.
Thank you so much.
There she is, Kate Shefty from the Seattle Times. Yeah, it's new markets are tricky that way. And when there's early success and it's not followed up, it can be difficult. And we always have to keep in mind, too. And this is why I think that Seattle is going to make some big moves here in the offseason. Selling tickets. This is still a gate-driven, you know, gate-driven league. And that's where most of the revenue is produced. And when that starts to take a little bit of a back seat here, changes happen. So, you know, does the Dave Haxtell dismissal shock me? Should it shock anybody? It probably shouldn't. Should it shock anyone that they're bringing in Dan Bylsma, who's right now working through all those players at Coachella Valley, many of whom are going to play with Seattle for the next 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years? No, at all. I think what a lot of people will probably be curious about, I know I am, is what does Ron Francis do this offseason to the roster? Because it's not just, like, first of all, Ron Francis, like, you know Ron Francis, he's a really, really patient manager. He does not rush into anything. And I don't think this would be the summer of Ron Francis rushing into anything. I think Ron Francis has taken 3 years and had a look under the hood to see what he has, and now has started to make his decisions. And now I think this is the summer that we see Ron Francis snap into action. Thanks to Kate for stopping by. Maddie Marchese aboard one more time. Where are you at on? Here we are in the middle of playoffs talking about Seattle, but they fired their coach yesterday. Where are you at on what you think Francis is going to do in the offseason? Do you think he's going to be, you know, calm, reserved, patient Ron Francis, or is this the summer to make moves?
I don't know that he can be patient, and I don't know that he can be calm. I look at the team, and it was the same conversation that we were having this offseason. They had they go and beat the defending Stanley Cup champions, and you're like, okay, they're not going to be able to continue this run of A, high shooting percentage, B, having scoring.
That's the big one.
Yeah.
That is the huge one here that everyone talked about, said, hold on a second. This is not going to, they're not going to shoot the lights out like this. They're not going to dine out on the shooting percentage. That's not going to stay.
No.
There's going to be a step backwards here.
And not only that.
That's the big one.
But Jeff, I think Matty Beniers is going to be a really good player. He took a step back, especially offensively. And I know he battled some injuries, but they don't have those game breakers. They really don't. Like, I like Jared McCann. Jared McCann scored 40 goals in this league, and he scored 30 this past season. Mm-hmm. But Jared McCann is not that game breaker, and I think that's what they lack. And that is something that is very important in this league. You need superstars if you want to win. We could talk about, you know, oh, you got to play good team defense, and, you know, when you have depth scoring, that's all fine and dandy. But if you don't have your Nathan McKinnons or your Connor McDavids or, you know, your Leon Draisaitl, go down the list. It doesn't matter. But the point being is you can't win without those guys, and they don't have those guys. Now, can you draft them? Sure, that takes a long time. But you can also go out and try and trade for some of these guys too. And I think that that's the path that Seattle has to go here if they want to maintain success in the market. I think your point about, you know, selling tickets is good one.
I just don't, like, no one's letting go of their young superstars. Like, no one's letting go of those guys. Like, you look at, like, we're talking about the Los Angeles Kings, and look, it's not looking good for them in the playoffs right now, obviously. You know, their season could be over tomorrow. And we're looking at Rob Blake and saying, how'd you not go out and get a netminder? But when you're going to market and you're calling Nashville and you're saying, yeah, well, what do you want for UC Saros? And Barry Trotz is saying the only person that will entertain is Quentin Byfield. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one's letting go of these guys.
I agree.
Nor should they, right? Sam Pollock would always say, it's the standard line, Montreal Canadiens, one of the best GMs of all time, never give up on a young player until you're 100% certain.
Yeah.
If you're 99% certain, don't do it.
Well,
if you're 100% certain, okay, do it.
I'll tell you, there's two guys that are hitting the free agent market, or at least they might hit the free agent market, that scored a lot of goals this year. And I don't know that there'd be any interest from these players, but I would certainly make a play on them. I mean, Steven Stamkos may not be going back to Tampa, and Sam Reinhart may not be going back
Everyone's
to Florida.
Everyone's on Stamkos.
But I'm just saying, like, they could be available.
Yeah, they could.
They might
still
not
think
be,
that
but...
somehow Reinhart stays in Florida. I have more of, this is not based on anything anyone has told me. This is all based on how I feel about it. I can't see Bill Zito letting go of Reinhart. I think one way or the other, they keep as much of this band together as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't see Reinhart. The other thing is, too, I don't think Reinhart wants to go anywhere.
I wouldn't.
Like, both sides want to make this work. You can make the argument that with Stamkos, one side wants to make it work. The other side, as Stamkos told us in the preseason, didn't even engage in any conversations.
Well,
anyhow,
we just signed Seattle a 40-goal scorer, Jeff.
Stamkos' name is going to be attached to every team out there. Utah needs a Steven Stamkos. Well, Stamkos going to Detroit is old general manager and Steve Yzerman. Okay, time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Maddie, I think I know what you're thinking tonight.
Yeah, it's the game. It's the early one. Thankfully, it's early because these late ones are killing me. It's the Maple Leafs at the Bruins. Bruins favored by 1.5. Toronto has scored more than two goals just once in this series, as we know. Jeremy Swayman has been fantastic. Here's a quote for you, Jeff. This team gave up the exact same 3-1 lead last year. So sports is a crazy thing. I think we've all seen some crazy comebacks in our lives. Thank you, Ryan Reeves.
They also gave up that 3-1 series lead against a team that almost won the Stanley Cup.
A team that's better, yes.
And that was the Florida Panthers. But I get it. Like, you have to think that way if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, mm-hmm. right? Again, it's not like, oh, we got to win three games. No, you got to win one game three times. Like, that's all the cliches start to apply. This is what we have to do.
One period at a time.
This is how we have to do it. It's going to be time. All our answers
shift
are in
by
that
shift.
All the cliches apply here. I know.
Leave
it all out on the ice.
Here's what we know, and I mentioned this yesterday. This has been one of the best, most brilliant series that Brad Marchand has ever been a part of. Because, like, I was talking with David Amber yesterday.
Yes.
He has towed the line. He has not crossed it. But, boy, oh, boy, has he been super effective.
That line. Listen, the tweet last week from Simon Schemberg. Like, Schemberg was 100% on the mark. And I'll tell you what. If you think back, like, the way that we're talking about Brad Marchand here, who, by the way, folks, whether you'll, especially if you hate him, love him or hate him, he's going to the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Like, that's a career he's carved out here. If you would have told me that guy in 2011... would be like this mature, responsible, still, you know, walks the line of clean and dirty, but still is like the consummate leader and professional on a team. That guy from 2011, who they had to get out of establishments with a soup ladle, is now all of a sudden the modicum of responsibility to how you handle a team. Man, Marchand has been incredible. And will continue to do so. It's an amazing performance. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. Still here. Remarkable. And feeling okay, Matt Marchese. Feeling okay. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, looking forward to talking to Colby Armstrong about, amongst other things, the retirement of his shirt on the TNT set the other night. I'm not sure if you got a glimpse of that. Did you see them retiring his shirt, Maddie?
I did. I also saw Colby, and we should ask him about this.
Glorious.
Paul Bissonnette went banana sandwich after looking for the highlight package, and he literally had Colby in tears on the set because Colby was laughing so hard. It was remarkable.
Which goal was it? Which goal did he call? I remember watching it, and I was just more taken back by how Biz was over the top about the whole thing. But that was like the most animated. Oh, it was the Hendrix LaPierre goal.
Yes,
that was it.
Because he did the open.
Yes, it was the Hendrix LaPierre goal.
Because he did the lineup, and that's what got Biz all fired up for everything.
That's right.
Yeah,
that was so good.
Yeah.
Those guys have fun.
They do.
Okay, so like, do you want to just like wage war here over goalie interference?
Well, I mean, like, I don't know.
Hang on, let me just spell out my bias here.
Sure.
My bias is
you are a goalie. That's your bias.
Again, I'm painting with a wide brush here. I'm painting here with a wide brush, and that is, generally, people would rather just complain about something and throw their hands in the air than try to figure out what a standard is. And I find that a lot of people in this conversation on goalie interference are much quicker to say, like, oh, no one knows what it is. Who knows? It's all subjective. That makes no sense. And there's no standard, instead of trying to find if there is a standard. And it's been quite clear for a long time. And to be honest with you, maybe it's just because I'm like tired and I'm sick. I still have a cold and I'm just, ugh. That I'm just like, okay, I can't even entertain it today. But let's have it out. Okay. Let's have it out on goalie interference.
Firstly, I feel attacked.
So give me your perspective on goalie interference.
I feel attacked.
You're being challenged. You're being challenged by someone that's been sick going back to Friday afternoon when I was sweating and shivering.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, so maybe I misspoke. It's not that I don't understand it. Okay. How about this? I don't like it. Maybe that's a better way. I don't like it. That's different. That's different.
That's fine. I'm happy to have that conversation. But again, I'll come back with, okay, if you don't like it, what should they do instead?
Okay.
Because now, again, for all of the listeners, this the way that it works is, if you go into the crease, if you even just, like we saw with Anthony Cirelli, even when you're in the crease, even if you just so much as barely touched the goaltender's gloves, that's what we saw, then that'll be called goalie interference, because you've chosen to go into that space that you're not allowed to go into and interfere with a goaltender. And also, the other thing that I want to keep everyone to keep in mind here, this is unlike what John Cooper was saying last night, with all due respect. Do you think the NHL wants goalies battling for place, battling for spots like defensemen and forwards are in front of the net? They're trying to stop the puck. Like, I like John Cooper a lot. We all do. But I found the idea of him comparing, you know, players battling for position and saying, like, you know, that goaltenders, you know, should have to battle for their positions as well because all players in the playoffs are battling. I find that rings a little bit hollow, because I don't know that John Cooper would want to see Andrei Vasilevsky have to battle for space as shots are coming in at 90 miles an hour.
With that being said, do you want to play the John Cooper here? And then people can have an understanding.
You know what? That's a good idea.
Yeah, let's play.
Let's do it.
So, Lance, let's play that, and then we'll come back and we'll react to it.
I'm going to address this. So this is clearly a turning point in the game. If anybody's going to talk about this game, they're going to talk about the goals that were taken away. And in this league where goals are at a premium, and how, you know, we've done is make the rules for more goal scoring. That's what we've done. And every year there seems to be something we tweak so more goals can be scored. And that's great. But, you know, there's mandates, and the words were to pull a goal off the board, it has to be unbelievably egregious. That's the standard, to pull a goal off the board. Well, the first one's on the board, and I couldn't find anything remotely egregious about that. You know, it's really tough. Like, Forsling is holding on. Like, it's a full penalty. He's holding on to Duclair. So he's trying to yank. He's trying to get his balance. It really does affect nothing. Bob misses the puck, and it's a net front battle, and it's in the net. Like, I can't. That's just the part for me. And then, so now we have to rebound from that. We do. And then the next one is a net front battle. And I will give the goalie credit. He quit on the play. He completely quit. Didn't see it, didn't whatever, and then flailed. And there was, I mean, maybe incidental contact at most. And then, but now we have to challenge it, because they saw the reaction of the goaltender, and Bob's doing the right, you know, he duped him, and so be it. But now we have to make that challenge. And again, it's like, well, then is there net front battles aren't allowed anymore? And that's part of everybody's game. It's like the boxing out that goes there, it's like prison rules in the playoffs, but it's not prison rules for the goalie. Like the second something happens, you know, like we might as well put skirts on them then, if that's how it's going to be. I mean, they have to battle through stuff too. And when the players are working so hard on both teams, and it's, like I said, it's a war down there, I think we're letting the goalies off the hook. And they've got way more pads on than everybody else does. So, you know, the egregious part, I couldn't see it. And so now we go into the third period, and this conversation is going down if we'd won 6-1. But we're going into the third period now, down one, where maybe we're up one, or maybe it's tied and it's a different game. And I'll give our guys credit. We had some looks, you know, in the third to tie it, and we don't. And then we kind of shot ourselves in the foot on the fourth one by, you know, how we played that. But again, give Florida credit. They weathered that little storm we had, but it's the circumstance we were put in that I felt, again, this is just my opinion, I felt was, you know, a little unfair. And I just like the spirit of the rule of, especially in the playoffs, like, come on, how do you let those slide? Does this by any means, we were going to say we're going to win the series? It does not. But would it have changed a lot of the momentum of this game and the way things had gone? I think so.
Highly intelligent coach. Now, there is one thing through all of that, one very important thing through all of that, that John Cooper left out. And that is going into the crease voluntarily. And that's why I said off the top of the show with you, Maddie, I could, even though I disagree with it, I could listen to an argument for the declare goalie interference being a bad call, but not the Cirelli one. But in both circumstances, both players went into the crease on their own. You know, Cooper talks about battles there. True, absolutely. Battles in front of the net. Prison rules. I disagree with the idea about prison rules for goaltending.
Yeah, that might be
I don't think anybody wants that. I know what John was doing. John's a smart guy.
He's a lawyer.
but he's a lawyer. I understand what he's doing. He's highly intelligent human being. And I understand what he's trying to say. But the thing that he's deliberately, I believe, leaving out here is both Anthony Duclair and Anthony Cirelli went into the blue paint on their own. They weren't pushed into the blue paint. They went on there. They went in that area on their own. Now, did Forsling hold Duclair into that spot? Probably. But again, Duclair goes in there on his own. So think again. I keep saying it this way. Burn this in your head. When you go into the crease, your liability goes sky high for anything that happens afterwards. That's why both goalie interference calls were made the way they were. Goalie interference is not that hard to figure out. You just got to wrap your head around one very key thing. You go into the blue paint, you're in trouble if anything happens with the goaltender. And no, there's no prison rules there. There's no, the goalie's got a battle, or Bob dove, or he sold that one. He should have held his stick. He sold that one for the officials and drew a penalty. Good for him. He embellished. No, you go into the crease, your liability goes through the roof. Start there. Instead of just saying, we don't know what the standard is. We don't know what goalie interference is. Yes, we do know what goalie interference is. And those are two, I would argue, good calls. I know it stings for Tampa. I know it stings for John Cooper to have two goals taken back in a series where scoring goals is tough. And the other thing that I do want to point out, and again, to the lawyer, John Cooper, Do you see how he framed everything? This goes back to the brilliance of John Cooper. I really want, as much as I disagreed with him about it, I really do want to applaud something. He framed the whole conversation like this. Actually, can we run it back? And let's just play the very, very first part of John Cooper talking about this goalie interference situation.
I'm going to address this. So this is clearly a turning point in the game. If anybody's going to talk about this game, they're going to talk about the goals that were taken away. And in this league where goals are at a premium and how, you know, all we've done is make the rules for more goal scoring. That's what we've done. And every year there seems to be something we tweak so more goals can be scored. And that's great. But, you know, there's mandates. And the words were to pull a goal off the board, it has to be unbelievably egregious. That's good.
We got what we need.
Okay, I was waiting
so,
for that.
Maddie, it's so brilliant. So he grabs the conversation as, okay, we're going to talk about these two goalie interference things. But here's how I want to frame the conversation. I'm going to frame the conversation like this. We're in a league right now where we're looking for more offense. We're in a league right now, Your Honor. I mean, we're in a league right now, Your Honor, where we're looking for more goals. More goals need to be scored here. I'm going to get to the goalie interference calls here in a second. But right now in this league, we're looking for new ways to score goals. Goals are at a premium in the NHL, Your Honor. We need more goals. So the whole conversation he frames in a very lawyerly fashion because, yeah, everybody wants more goals. Goals are fun. Goals are cool. We love seeing more of it. Like highly offensive games. I just thought that the framing of it was kind of brilliant by John Cooper. Again, as much as I disagree with how he saw both the goalie interference calls, and I understand, you know, going at it like, oh, it should be a battle zone in front of the net. What's the prison rules out there for the players? Should be prison rules for the goaltenders. I don't even think that John Cooper believes that. It does sound really good. I mean, it's playoff time. Like, he's playing on all the stereotypes we have about playoffs and battles in front of the net and being tough and holding your position. The one thing that he leaves out is going into the crease on your own.
Yeah.
Which both Anthony Cirelli and Anthony DeClair did. Anyway, that's just my thought. I've barked enough here. What do you think about all that?
So, the going into the crease on your own, like, okay, I get that. But the contact in both of those situations were, it was not.
Don't matter? Yes.
No, I know they don't matter. But my.
It doesn't matter.
No,
I know. It doesn't matter.
Because any contact is contact. For me, it's just. And it's so hard to determine this and evaluate if this is the case because each situation is different. But is the contact enough that it stops the goaltender from making a play on the puck? And I would argue in both of those cases, the answer was no. And I do agree that Bobrovsky absolutely sold the second one in that regard, to make it look more egregious than it actually was. Cirelli, in his defense, is being held there by Mikkola, and he tries to spin off to get away from the grasp of the... I don't think he wants to run into Sergei Bobrovsky because he knows
already gone
if it
in.
Goes in. He was on the edge. He was on the edge. I was watching the overhead, and he was on the edge when he engages with Mikkola, and then he tries to spin off, and as he's spinning off, that's when he enters the crease on his own, but with an impediment in front of him, which is Mikkola, who's doing his job. Like, that's the problem that I have with it. So, I don't know. I don't like it.
He put himself in a position where other bad things could happen to him because he went into the crease or had a foot in the crease.
Okay.
But again, here's what I keep coming back to. If you don't like it, cool. I understand it. I understand what the NHL is trying to do. I understand how they're trying to set some type of standard that should be by now easy enough for people to understand. But if you don't like it, cool. What's the alternative?
Well, the alternative is what I just said. Like, but again, it becomes subjective. Like, do I believe that the contact was enough to hinder the goalie from stopping a puck? And that's the problem, right?
Is that the way? Everybody who didn't like those calls, is that what you want? Is that better than what we have now?
But
where it's cut and dry. You know that if you go in the crease and you even just nudge the goaltender slightly or just graze past the gloves or, you know, clip the heel of a skate inadvertently, like anything like that, what's better? Maddie's idea or the standard right now?
Oh, I'll
I would argue still the standard right now.
Okay. Well, let's put a poll out. Do we like the standard or Matt's idea? I vote Matt's idea. On another note, actually, do you want to get to the Cooper on Stamkos and then the Stamkos stuff too, or do we want to move on from Tampa?
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
We did a lot on Tampa.
Is there anything else you want to add on the goalie interference? Because I know it's a big one. My main issue now is people saying like, I don't even know what goalie interference is. Yes, you do. You do know what goalie interference is.
Yeah.
And if you don't, it's not that hard to figure out.
Yeah, I just don't like
find
it.
Out about that, people. You know, that's fine.
I don't like a lot of things. So, I mean, I'm also
I don't like olives.
Very grumpy.
I don't like olives.
Yeah, you know, I don't either. And people that are like, oh, I can't believe you're, well, the worst is, you're Italian. You don't like olives. I'm like, yeah, because they're gross. That's why I don't like them, because they're disgusting. They're absolutely
green, black.
I'm shocked that you don't like olives. That I'm actually shocked at that.
Can't stand them. I know. You would think that I would, especially because of how much I love salty things, but no, can't stand them.
Yeah, no.
No thanks.
That and vegetables. Okay. Let's do the Stamkos because, I mean, I think we all expected the answer was going to be what it was, but this is Steven Stamkos following the game last night on his future. He was asked a question, and here's the clip.
As the clock was winding down, were you thinking about sort of the uncertainty of what's now to come with you?
No, that never crossed my mind. So I'm out there battling to try to help our team win. Regardless, at the end of the game, we're trying to score, and you know, there's some pride on the line for our group. And so, no.
Shocking that was his response.
Well, I mean, yeah, I got it. I don't think it's like, yeah, you know, I took those last 12 seconds. You know, we're down 6-1. We're getting our asses handed to us, and I'm just thinking like, I don't know that I've ever been to Salt Lake City.
Seattle seems nice this time of year.
I think everybody, Seattle's lovely this time of year. Yeah, I wonder what Steve Yzerman's doing these days. I think we all know where he wants to go, and that's where he is right now. I think he wants to stay, and he wants to retire as a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And there's only, you know, one person that's really going to decide whether that happens. Well, two, because two need to sign a deal, but Julien Brisebois. Like, we know that Stamkos is interested, clearly. I mean, he was really disappointed there weren't any contract talks in the offseason. But we don't know from Julien Brisebois' point of view what that's going to be. Or even what Julien Brisebois' thoughts on this team are and where he needs to get it. Like, this is back-to-back first-round exits for Tampa.
Yeah.
Again, there's, like, Hall of Famers on the team, right? Like,
you pay the Stanley Cup tax, Jeff.
And you do pay a Stanley Cup, that's 100% right. And Kucherov and Point and Cirelli and go right down the list still. And Andrei Vasilevsky. But no one knows what Julien Brisebois' plans are other than Julien Brisebois and probably a very close and a single-digit amount of people around him. And I think we all like the romantic story of, you know, the one guy that goes wire to wire, the Steve Yzerman story, you know, the Joe Sakic story, you know, wire to wire with the same organization. So I think it would be the best place for all of us because it's the most comfortable that Stamkos stays in Tampa. He's successful there. He loves it there. They love him there. You know, is he the best Tampa Bay Lightning player of all time? Discuss amongst yourselves, Marty St. Louis and Vinny LeCavalier, et cetera. I tend to think so too, but again, conversation for another day. So we'll see. Like until proven otherwise, my default is still just like we talked about with Reinhardt a second ago. I think Reinhardt goes back to Panthers, and I think Stamkos goes back to the Tampa Bay Lightning, but it all depends on what Julien Brisebois feels and how Julien Brisebois feels about this team.
Yeah. Do you want some, because you guys kind of talked about,
you tell me, you direct.
Yeah. Okay. So we have some injury.
I'll go anywhere you want.
We have some injury updates. It's not Sam Bennett. Rick Bonus says, both Brendan Dillon and Vlad Namestnikov have been officially ruled out for game 5.
He,
So that, yeah,
hang on.
That.
He's it's funny too, because he mentioned something along the lines of, and by the way, it's not a broken jaw.
It's a
for a nemestikov.
Fractured
it's
cheekbone.
Broken which feels cheekbone.
Like, yeah, that doesn't
fractured
seem,
cheekbone.
Yeah, it doesn't seem nice either.
That doesn't tickle. oh God. And not surprised about Brendan Dillon either. But there was some sort of intimation that, well, you know, we'll see. Maybe he'll. I remember hearing that and thinking, holy smokes.
He's got a face
tough,
made of steel.
But, you know, playoff tough. No
well,
kidding.
Cole Perfetti gets to. He gets on power play two, Jeff. So there you go. Maybe some lightning in a bottle for Cole Perfetti, who we are both a fan of on this show.
I'll tell you what. Hang on. I'll tell you what. Just as an aside. I know he's a restricted free agent, which leads to another conversation.
I know what you're thinking here.
What are those contract negotiations going to be like?
Yeah. Look at my points per 60.
This offseason.
Give me an offer.
That's going to be something. Speaking of offer, how about offer sheet?
Well, that's honestly, that's where I thought you were going, because we all love the chaos of an offer sheet.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Carolina Hurricanes, sure. And Don Waddell. Yeah. I mean, if you're a team that's, I'd imagine that, I guess it depends on what, here's the thing. Winnipeg can't afford to lose guys like this, a guy that you've invested in developing, a guy that you spent a fairly high draft pick on, like all of that stuff. It's not as if you're going out in the free agent market and bringing these guys in. That's not happening in Winnipeg. You have to develop internally, which is why the usage for him this year was so curious to me, because this is a player that needs to be a part of your future. And that's where I was kind of like, this doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I know, maybe there's something with Rick Bonus and who knows, but the situation is such that they cannot let a guy like this walk. Cause okay. So somebody signs him to an offer sheet.
Well, he's not going to walk.
No,
but I
mean,
he's a restricted free agent. I think offer sheet's legit. I think it's if you're and he's represented by Kurt Overhart Sports. Cam Stewart is the agent there. If you're KO Sports, how are you not looking around the NHL and saying, okay,
absolutely,
let's see what we can do for an offer sheet.
Yeah,
let's see if Winnipeg will match.
I mean to walk as if he's not there, and that whatever you're getting back on an offer sheet, you're not getting the package of first and second round picks with the number that he's probably going to come in at. So you're going to, in return, you're going to get assets that are probably not going to equal Cole Perfetti at this point. And I think that's the problem with this situation, and why the way that they used him and the fact that he's, you know, had a hard time getting into the lineup late in the year. And I understand that they brought in Toffoli, they brought in Monahan, and it was hard to crack the top six. But this has been a situation over the last two games that they've had a hard time scoring goals. And what does the guy do? He scores goals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part that I really didn't understand. But hey, all the chips are on the table here now for Winnipeg. It is, you know, four games tonight, which is also interesting, that four games tonight, all four of them are win or go home for four teams, which is very, very rare to happen on one night.
At the upper end, I'm just looking at the offer sheet calculators here. At the upper end, $4.29 million, one second round pick.
My point exactly. So that...
$6.435 million, a first, and a third.
And he's not getting there. He's not getting that unless somebody goes crazy and goes the one-year Kotkaniemi thing like Carolina did, which I mean, maybe that could happen, but I highly doubt that's going to happen. So the second-round pick that you get in return is probably not going to equal Cole Perfetti. So if you're Winnipeg, you almost have no choice here outside of trading him for an asset, and the fact that you didn't play him a lot down the stretch only diminishes his value. I feel like I'm playing fantasy GM right now.
What if he scores tonight? Do they walk in there in negotiations and say, "Yeah, we're going to count that as a regular season goal, so we're going to open up with what his 20 goal bonus would have been." As if he got the 20 goal bonus. We'll just add that onto the contract next year.
Yeah, we'll tack that on agent
because of all
fee.
The scratches.
Yeah, well, and that's like,
okay.
Again, the guy who scored 19 goals, not playing on the first power, not basically getting no power play time outside of guys getting hurt, and he's not in your lineup. Like, I don't know. I don't understand. I understand that there is a, you know, a sensitivity around young players and certain coaches. You know, lots of coaches don't love having young players in the lineup. Especially, I get it. I understand. Guy scored 19 goals and you're having trouble scoring outside of game one. I mean, I don't know. One plus one is not equaling two.
You know who likes having? Hang on. You know who likes having young players in the lineup? You see why what Wyatt Johnson's doing right now?
Well,
the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, that's and you look at that type of success.
You can have young players in your lineup.
Yes, okay. You can, especially if they're insulated with good veterans. Which Cole Perfetti would be insulated with good veterans on this Winnipeg team, which he has been. So I don't know. I don't get it.
One thing I want to get in here, and we'll see tonight. Good luck to Cole Perfetti tonight for the Winnipeg. Good luck to the Winnipeg Jets, right? Like, don't another Canadian team with their backs up against the wall. Vancouver, Canadian team, can close out tonight against the Nashville Predators. Man, you know what broke my heart today?
What's
watching,
that?
Listening, reading that TJ Oshie presser today.
Yeah.
The media availability when he talked about not just the broken hand on the Matt Rempe hit in game three, but the back issues. That I'd love to come back, but I don't know what my back is going to be like. Like, he's got one more year. I think it's 5.75 on term. When he talked about how bad it is with his back, and this is the line that I'm just like, oh, I think any person goes, oh, what an awful feeling. When he talks about his back issues and says, I'm on the floor peeing into water bottles. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, that's not good.
When you think about what everything that guy, I'm glad he got a Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm really glad that TJ Oshie got a Stanley Cup. When you look at what that guy's been through physically, what that guy's been through emotionally, with his family, to go through the NHL and have the type of career, not just in the NHL, but internationally for a Team USA that TJ Oshie had. I don't think anyone would be surprised, should be surprised at all, if we've seen the last of TJ Oshie in the NHL. That's the way the whole thing feels to me. Again, right now, the team just got eliminated, and I understand all that, but I'm not sure about you, Maddie, but to me, this feels like, and this might put the final punctuation on it for me, just listening to Oshie talk now, everything's all about, I don't know whether my back can take one more year.
Yeah, there is this, you know, the life after hockey thing too, Jeff. And that's what a lot of people do forget in the moment. Like, this man has kids.
Dude, play with your kids.
Yeah.
Tie your own shoelaces. And, like, the joys in life.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, he's made his money as an athlete. And the life after sports. And I know that adjustment is very tough for a lot of people. But I think TJ Oshie can go out and say, I gave it all. I played over 1,000 games in the NHL. I had over 600 points. I won a Stanley Cup. Yeah. Like, all of that stuff. And you can say, that is a fulfilling career. I made a bunch of money. Now I can, you know, have a back and not be in pain because I don't have to train. I don't have to do all that stuff and just enjoy my life. Yeah. I would be very happy for TJ Oshie if this was it, because you've seen the athletes that have trouble post career walking.
Oh yeah.
My knees are this, my shoulders are this, like all of that kind of stuff. It would suck to not have TJ Oshie in the league, because TJ Oshie has always been a really fun player to watch, because he can, you know, he's one of those guys that can beat you in multiple ways. If this is it, it's a fantastic career and one that he should absolutely be proud of. But man, go save your back. Like those stories, like that stuff that he was talking about, like, the broken hand was nothing compared to the pain that I had to deal with my back. Like, broken hand hurts.
Yeah.
Imagine what he has to go through every day with his back. You can deal with a broken hand, your back being hurt and trying to walk around and be a functioning human being. Not the easiest thing in the world, I'm sure.
The other thing that I liked about Oshie, did you see what he said about the Panarin hit?
No, I didn't see that, actually.
It was clean.
Good for him.
Right?
Lots of guys would have taken that shot. Lots of guys would have taken that shot.
Another reason to love TJ Oshie. All right. there we go, coughing. Hitting a break. Going to come back with Colby Armstrong from the NHL on Sportsnet, from the NHL on TNT. He's going to join me here in a couple of moments. Colby Armstrong, the Arm Dog, is next on The Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Take a deep breath. Colby's next.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, starting at noon Eastern across the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you consume your podcast, folks, we'll be here. Colby Armstrong is a flat-out star. Prove me wrong. From the NHL on Sportsnet, the NHL on TNT, and seemingly everywhere. Like, you're everywhere these days, Colby. Like, I opened up my fridge this morning and you jumped out. I put two pieces of bread in the toaster. You pop out. Like, everywhere I go, it's Colby Armstrong this and Colby Armstrong. And I love it, Colbs. How you been, pal?
Yeah, I've been good. Thanks, buddy. That's real nice of you. Yeah, it's been crazy. And especially with playoffs and the life of what I'm doing right now, just pick up the phone and you get a call and does this date work? And I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah. And I just never say no. And so here I am all over the place, but I love playoff hockey. It's the best time. And obviously the games have been really good. And I think we can all agree on that. And, you know, it's just lots of stories, lots of great games. We had, you know, a couple teams knocked out already, but and also like some records of hits in a game. It's just, you know, what we're seeing, just everything right now. It's awesome.
We got a lot to get into here, but I do want to ask you this question. Did you ever think that you would have an article of clothing retired next to Wayne Gretzky?
Any kind of Gretzky thing. It was a sweater vest I was hanging up next to. I have no clue. Like, when I'm doing that with TNT, like, I have no clue what's coming next, what's going to happen, how it's going to work. It's pretty wild being in that setting, just because I don't know. Nothing is set up or planned that I know of. So yeah, it makes it really, really fun. And I can't believe when you're doing playoff games, like, you don't expect like something like that to happen when you're doing hockey, and then all of a sudden your burnt iron hole burnt shirt is going up to the rafters in the TNT studio next to Gretzky's sweater vest. I mean, I doesn't get any better than that. Honestly, it doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. Dude, I know you were howling at Biz calling Hendrix LaPierre's goal, but I was howling watching that shirt go up, man. I was howling. Just loving it, man. It made my day.
Yeah,
just
totally made my day. It was pretty amazing. It was pretty amazing, you know. And I looked over at Paul, and he was holding up an iron in his hand. Like, I was picturing, like,
yes,
what movie is that? Like, Serendipity with the jukebox over his head, or whatever movie that was back in the day. I don't know. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, that's what Biz looked like. He had these dumb sunglasses on. I was just dying. I was dying. I honestly, I've never cried, like, laugh cried so much on TV as I did on Sunday. It was a lot of fun.
Well, Biz calling that LaPierre goal was fantastic. I've seen him fired before, but not like that on TV. Like, what the heck?
Well, yeah. The thing that got to
how
me.
How many energy drinks like, on break?
None. He's like a freak. He's like all health and fitness guy. He's crazy. He doesn't do any of that stuff. I think he has a Red Bull here or there, but nothing. It's just wild. And like, when we came into that, it was so funny. The thing that got me going was the look on his face. And then he called for the clip. Yeah. The smile, his head was all up. He's like, give me the clip. The look on his face. I was just like, oh, here we go. I didn't know what was going to come. And then he went into like another galaxy, you know, calling that clip, and I couldn't hold it in. I was losing it. I couldn't believe he did that. It was just like, it was so Biz, you know. It was just so Biz. The guy's a machine, and yeah, he's fun to be on there with, because you never know what he's going to say or what he's going to do or what's going to happen. He calls for the clip. They play the clip. It was just great. It was great. It was crazy. I loved it.
It was awesome. All right. What's been your favorite series so far? Like, for me, I'm loving Dallas Vegas. I don't know whether that's just because my bias, which is like going into these playoffs, I had myself convinced this was going to be a great series. And so far we've seen great games between these two teams, and that awesome sequence yesterday where McNabb goes after Stankoven and then Jamie Benn just drops a hammer on McNabb after, like, oof, and then Stone and Benn are going at it again, just like they did last year. It's, I don't know, man. I love that series. That might be my favorite one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's big boy hockey, isn't it? Yeah, it's huge. I love that, too. Just Western Canadian guys going at it. I just tweeted out a little while ago. God, you know how I am, Jeffy. God bless Western Canadian boys and playoff hockey mixed together. It was just perfect. And Stankoven gets ran over. Skates fly up over his head. No big deal. McNabb's a big boy. He's known to throw those hits. And then Jamie Benn with absolute retribution makes McNabb do almost a backflip. It was unbelievable to start the game. That was right out of the gates. And I think that series is the best. I'm disappointed in my Jets. You know, I'm an alumni, right? Because of the Thrashers. I'm an alumni. So
digs
a little deeper. I was hoping they would push back a little more. I was hoping, like, you know, things would be different in that series. And it's, you know, they're on their heels completely in games. They're just blown away. They're scared of Colorado's speed. They're scared of it, and they can't do anything to dictate or get out of their way. Like, just get a little bit more aggressive. I just don't know why they're sitting back so much. So that series has kind of got me, you know, not feeling so great about hockey right now. But, that Colorado the Vegas and Dallas one picks me up.
But, you know, Winnipeg's in. I mean, did you see the comments the other night from both Rick Bowness and Mark Scheifele, where Bowness talked about, you know, only playing three quarters of the ice and, you know, just sort of saying, you know, players this and players that and got to commit. And then Mark Scheifele came out and said, you know what, Colorado made adjustments and we didn't. Just turn right back to the coach.
I know. Well, they've always had that there, haven't they? They've always had that there. Like, it's been.
Oh, yeah.
It's been like a few years now of postseason, you know. Drama, which drama is a big word now, isn't it, in the playoffs? But it's
just a little bit.
It's been years like that in Winnipeg, and I don't know if their adjustment to playing them was like, hey, let's just play it close, let's just, you know, be aware, let's collapse in, let's not play aggressive, let's be cautious. Because it looks to me like Colorado's able to dictate their game. They've cranked it up to level 10.
Yeah,
it's just going, okay, we're going to defend this idea by just being reserved and cautious with your skill and speed. And I just don't think you can do that with call. You know, you have to shut them down off the rush. Like LA, for example, with, you know, McDavid and the game that they won, the Kings won, they shut down McDavid. Like, he had an assist, but like, they shut him down through the neutral zone. He wasn't able to skate. They got up on him, stick on puck across the line when he's attacking 1-on-4. They did that last game as well. Edmonton still found a way to win that game. They were hanging on for dear life. They played really good defensively. But their plan is obviously to make it harder on them. You know, they're not going to let them freewheel and dictate. They're going to swarm them and surround them and not let them get into the zone and have numbers on them. And, you know, the Jets have just, they back up off the line. They're letting the D now jump into play, third and fourth wave of attack, and they're just opening the game up for them to, like, feast on them. And I look at Hellebuck. I critical him. Like, listen, you gotta be Hellebuck, right? Easier said than done against an offense like Colorado, but there has to be something there, you know, better in their game. There has to be something there better in their game, I think, in my opinion, with a more aggressive game planning against them to shut down time and space a lot better. And maybe that's easier said than done, but you have to do it against them, or else you're just going to let them run all over you.
Colbs, you were a Toronto Maple Leaf. What's going through those players' minds? I mean, every time they flip on the radio, the television, you know, go online, social media, everywhere, they are just getting torn to shreds. Like, everybody already has all their fantasy trades out there, who the next coach is going to be, like, all of it.
Oh, I know. It's crazy,
I mean, you know what Toronto's like. You swam in the Toronto waters. Like, you know the deal. Like, what's it like, Colbs?
It's hard. It is hard. I never played for teams with the skill and, you know, the teams that had regular seasons like these teams have had, and kind of, you know, where people put them. And, you know, sometimes that's on us because, you know, we talk about them in a range of what we think they are, and expectations are extremely high. And so, you know, that's set right there, you know, for them to have to try to meet, which sometimes can be hard. But, you know, I think if for any player in this situation, or any player that has played there, and you've heard Darcy Tucker talk about it, like, not everyone's built to be in that environment. And I give a ton of credit to guys that thrive in that type of environment in that market, it's tough. But, you know, there's been like personal attacks on guys like right now, and not just their game. Yeah. Like it's like how they are as people. And it's just like, I don't know if you can say that. I don't know. I don't know how these guys are as people. I don't know how they are as teammates. I'm not in the room, but I will say that what we're seeing and the expectation of what we know from watching and being involved in playoff hockey, I think the conversation should be like, listen, we've got to lay it on the line a lot more. We've got to, you know, find a way to be involved a lot more with our game in certain areas that can make tangible difference with the way we play and the way we play individually, because it's just not good enough right now. And, you know, Marchand's a big topic right now because he's eating everyone's lunch and he loves it and he doesn't care.
He's
and he's built for that.
He's great.
He's built for it. He's built for it though. And he's a smaller guy, but he's built for this. He loves being this guy. He loves being in this environment and he loves knowing that he's the alpha and he's like a coyote in the wild wheeling around marking his territory on everybody. And he doesn't care and he loves it. And he does it really well. And he's owning everybody. And to a certain degree on the other side, they don't have guys built like that. They don't have enough guys built like that through their team that Boston has. And when it comes down to it, when we look at the full picture, that's playoff hockey, right? That's a 7-game series. That's playoff hockey. And are you prepared as a team internally with your personnel that you have guys that can step up to that level? And that's been the big question all these years. That's been the big question with the core. That's been the big question with these good teams is in the playoffs, can they get to that level? And what we're seeing is it's not there. The playoff hockey gene or the playoff hockey bug isn't there.
The one enduring image for me, like for Brad Marchand is, well, first of all, like his play is exceptional. Like he's going to the Hall of Fame, folks. Like this guy is a Hall of Fame hockey player. Wrap your heads around that. Who still think that, you know, Brad Marchand is the same guy from 2011. He's not. And he's going to the Hockey Hall of Fame. But Colbs, that scene where Marchand, you know, in between whistles is just casually skating by the Maple Leafs bench. And you read his lips and he's saying, yeah, done in five. Yeah, this is over in five. And the Maple Leafs players are just bark, 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 bark. And he's just like, yeah, done in five. Yeah, this thing's over in five. It's casual. Like he's just having a coffee, reading the paper. Oh, yeah, done in five. This thing's done in five. And just driving the other team insane. Do you have a thought on Tampa exiting here and what's next for either that team and maybe another big question here, obviously, what's next for Stamkos?
Oh, I thought you were going to say John Cooper and come in to coach the Leafs. That's what everyone's saying online.
I know everyone's got like a combination of Rod Brindamore, Mike Sullivan, and John Cooper, and maybe even a dash of Joel Quenneville on the side going to coach the Maple Leafs already. And Sheldon Keefe's like, I got a game tonight. You know, we're playing tonight in Boston,
wild.
Everybody.
It is absolutely wild. This is what you have to deal with. I think it's huge that Tampa's out for other teams. I think it's huge they're out. You talk about the playoff bug. You talk about the intangibles and the things you need. Like, how impressive is their team and the way they battle and play, the pace with which they do it, the physicality that they can do it with, too, with all their guys through their lineup. You know, you look at Hagel, Cirelli, some of these guys through the depth. Like, those aren't guys you look at as, like, the mainstay guys. You know, the points, the Kucherovs, the Stamkos. These are, like, foot soldier guys for them that are just so battle-tested and so good with this team. And then, you know, you got Hedman and Sergachev comes back. I mean, I think for Florida to dispatch them as soon as they did was probably the best thing they could have done, because that team is just, if you look at that team, I wonder how many gamblers out there have Tampa Bay to win the cup this year. And even after looking at the season they had and where they sat, that they carry that much cachet about their game and their style of play with them. And they're a dangerous team. They could have done some major damage and they did against Florida. I mean, every game was right there pretty much. It just like they, I was so impressed with their game, and it's crazy that they're out as soon as they were, and credit to Florida for that.
One final thing with you here. The team that beat them, the Florida Panthers, first of all, another great game from Alexander Barkov. He was freaking tremendous again last night. That guy's so good. Sergei Bobrovsky, excellent as well. Like, this is, like, you talk about the playoff switch, what'd you call it, the playoff gene, the playoff bug, whatever it is, like, they have it. And it seems like the whole team does. Like everybody on this team has it. Like just dying for playoffs. They love it, and you can tell.
Yeah,
and now
it's baked in.
They're the best. They're the best team in the state. Best team in the state.
Yeah, they are. They are. It's baked in. And I mean, Keith Tkachuk, you know, last year just did something to this team to make them turn into a bunch of animals. You mean chirp them, right? He said they're too soft and they're getting pushed around. And
honestly,
since then, it's like canceling the U2 concert at the Sphere for Nashville. It's just like these moments, these galvanizing moments. And whatever it did, it changed them to this identity of like, we're not going to let anyone say that about us again. And they have performers that can put pucks in the net, as you mentioned, with Barkov and Reinhardt. And you can go down the list of guys, Tkachuk and
Verhaeghe. Keep going.
Verhaeghe, unbelievable. Yeah, you can just keep going. You can keep going about key players. But there's just an attitude, and there's a mindset, and there's a baked-in Panther hockey style with this team right now where – you know, Paul Maurice just has to lean against the glass and give great sound bites after games and before games and just open the door and let these guys go out there and just do their thing. And I mean, it's let them run, let these wild boys run. Then they come off the ice, they put the straight jackets on them and the Hannibal Lecter mask, put them on the little wheelie cart, get them on the planes and put them to the next venue. It's insane what these guys are. And They're a team that I think a lot of teams look at right now, and I don't know if they're not like Colorado with like that insanity, but they're a force with the full body of their team. They're nasty, they're mean, they're physical, they're deep, they can skate, and they're in for the long haul. Like every period, they're in. When the puck is down, it's on, and it's a whole nother animal than what we're used to seeing, I think, around the NHL. And they fully committed to it. They know that's their identity. They love what they are. I mean, you've got Ekman Larson, who forever has been kind of a skilly defenseman who's in all these scrums, and he's totally bought in too. Like, what are they feeding this guy now down there? So it's a total, like, you want to come here? You want to come to South Florida? You got to eat nails.
Dude.
And you got to play this style of hockey.
I got to wrap up, but like in 20 seconds, how good is Gustav Forsling? And how many teams has Gustav Forsling played? Like, and he's a waiver guy.
Waiver guy.
And I was just in Florida, they may win the cup.
Yeah, unbelievable. And that Mikkola's a monster, and Montour is an in-your-face little defenseman that can skate.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing Ekblad, who has settled into, you know, a guy with expectations of first overall selection and this and that, that just settled into this rock solid, big body guy that, you know, plays a good 200-foot game and he's not like Makar, and he's confident and comfortable in this style of play. It's kind of made him so much better and important. These guys, Forsling's a part of that too. I mean, he's exploded. He's exploded on the scene. He's a stud.
He really has. All right. I got to hustle. Congrats on the dress shirt retirement, Colby.
Yep.
Congratulations on that one. Well, you should be right beside number 99. I've always felt that way. There's Wayne Gretzky and then there's Colby Armstrong.
It all started sitting next to you,
together,
buddy, at those Memorial Cups all those years.
You're always my favorite was still Red Deer with you, man, where I found out that you're the real mayor of Red Deer. Still my favorite, buddy. You be good. We'll talk soon, Colbs.
All right, thanks for having me on, Jeffy. Miss you, buddy.
See you, bud. Miss you, too. Colby Armstrong from the NHL on Sportsnet and the NHL on TNT. Want to thank him. Want to thank Kate Shefty. Want to thank Elliot Friedman. And want to thank Matt Marchese, Lance Kennedy, Jen Rolnick, and Jake Schultz for helping out with today's broadcast. Four games on the go around the NHL this evening. We could see four teams move on. Enjoy tonight. We'll talk tomorrow.